On this week's Devils in the Details, we now know that Erik ten Hag is continuing next season. What does that spell for United? And how is the new front office planning to right the wrongs of last season? And United have reportedly been exploring deals for Everton's Jared Branthwaite, but the options for him, as well as a few other targets at centre-back, seem to be drying up. What's the best course of action going forward? Case. United haven't lacked news, but it definitely has been overshadowed by the Euros, and the news hasn't really materialized in any extreme changes in the first team, in the men's first team. How have you been enjoying the Euros so far, and were you expecting to see more action from United by this point?
I've been enjoying the Euros a lot. It's been fantastic so far. A lot of drama, some really, really excellent goals. The Dutch national team hasn't let me down yet, so right now I'm feeling pretty good. But obviously, actually later today they play again, so we'll see. Maybe that'll change by the time I've edited this episode. As for United news, most of it's been pretty underwhelming, I would say. Nothing that really gets you going. I mean, obviously retaining the current manager was the thing that we haven't even spoken about. Since we last recorded, but we've got thoughts and we'll share them, but I don't have any preliminaries, anything I feel like I need to get out there right this second.
Yeah, I feel like we'll talk about the manager in a second, and then we'll talk about transfer targets. For those of you who are listening in now, this is probably up at some point in the last week of June, and then we've got another one coming out on Monday for you. Where we're going to be talking about a few of the transfer targets that have been materializing in the news. I think it's a lot of conflicting ones where they're not obvious United should do this or United should not do this. So they make for interesting discussion, but perhaps not moves that are exciting as the ones that you'd expect when United need to change this team quick. We'll start with Erik ten Hag, though. I think our views on Ten Hag and what happened last season, and I think the fact that he perhaps deserved to be replaced, or that United should look for a replacement. I don't know about deserved as a way of determining how manager movement works in the sport, but we both wanted a new manager for United. United have gone and kept Ten Hag. Besides the reservations that we've shared about Ten Hag in the past, what is the blueprint now to fix this moving forward?
I mean, I think it just comes down to you've got to get the recruitment right, and more specifically, you've got to invest in young players, invest in players who have not only the ability to make a high-end impact, but also are going to be around for a long time, aren't going to be, you know, tailing off before you can actually be competitive. It's something we've spoken about many times.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the move now is going to be, at least to some extent, doubling down on the approach from last season. It kind of puts me in a weird spot because I feel like doubling down on the approach from last season is probably the wrong idea given how materialized. Like, I think that the rationale for keeping him is, at least to some extent, the idea that he tried this style, it didn't quite work, and a lot of the reasons why it didn't work were attributed to personnel and the fact that a lot of United's key players weren't available, and even when they were available, they weren't necessarily ideal to compete with some of the top sides in the Premier League. And so the idea is that if you're able to fill a side with players who are more competitive within this style, in quotes, then Ten Hag suddenly becomes a much more competitive figure in the Premier League as a coach, and this United team are able to turn around what wasn't really working last season. And I think to some extent that might be one angle that the board are taking looking at this. I think that probably leads to disaster, but then I also don't really want to see compromise. Like, I also think another possibility is Ten Hag dials the switches back a little bit and plays a little bit more of a conservative approach next season. And then United are fine, but don't really do anything tactically special. And they have another fine league performance. And I don't really want to see that either. I feel like we're at a point now where we need to see tangible progress towards one of the best sides in the Premier League tactically. So ultimately, I don't really know where Ten Hag staying leaves us. And I agree that recruiting good young players is the next step because they will outlive Ten Hag if it's done correctly and Ten Hag still isn't able to fix things. And I also think they will perhaps give A, confidence for Ten Hag to implement whatever approach he wants, and B, even further lack of deniability that the approach isn't working if it continues to not work. So all of that is to say, I don't really know where we go next, but I have a lot of concerns about any possible direction that could be taken from the coaching perspective.
Yeah, I agree. His retention is extremely strange to me, but you know what? It's the hand we've been dealt. And so, yeah, I think the more interesting thing to talk about is how you can maximize, at least in the short term, how in the short term you can maximize the long term, if that makes sense. And I think that's sort of how I'll be looking at this summer. Basically, the question I'll be looking to answer is this move, let's say in any given transfer, does this move set us up for not just this coming year, but the years that ensue, you know, year two, year three, year four, if, you know, right now is year one. Because I think it's really hard to, it's hard for me to A, conceptualize how the side are going to approach the coming season tactically, and B, to buy into however they approach it in this moment, just because I don't have a lot of faith. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, it does make sense. I think on the topic of how to maximize the long term, I think you said player recruitment. To me, that makes a lot of sense. United are probably going to be looking towards, or should be looking towards, players who, you know, both athletically and technically are dominant at Premier League level, or players United believe could become that sort of level of dominance. And I think in the two options we're going to talk about over the course of the next two episodes, the two main options, we have that, but I don't necessarily think we have a complete picture of a player that fits directly in United's side. The first is Jared Branthwaite of Everton, left-footed center back, born 2002. A lot of rumors that Everton needed to sell, but it seems like they are quelling those concerns by selling a couple of younger players within the Premier League, which means that now United are being drawn into somewhat of a negotiation war with Everton, where I think United probably wanted to pay about $50 million for this player. Based on reports, Everton wanted United to pay about $70 million for this player. And then there are some suggestions that United could agree something in between, like a 55 plus 10, which still, to me, seems like quite a bit of money for a center back. United obviously need reinforcements in this position. Varane is walking for free. Currently, fourth choice is Johnny Evans as it stands, and there are a lot of rumors that Victor Lindelof could be leaving as well. Case, starting with Branthwaite, we have a couple of other options and alternatives that have also had some interesting news, but starting with Branthwaite, what are your thoughts here, having watched him at PSV, and then perhaps a little bit of having watched him at Everton?
Yeah, so full disclosure, I really did not watch very much of him at Everton. Everton was not a side that I watched a lot of this past season. That said, I do like the raw tools here. He's pretty strong on the ball. He's not, in my opinion, as fast as he is strong in the air. Like, I don't think he's slow, but I also don't think he's got top line speed compared to other center backs. Relatively two-footed. Like I said, strong on the ball. He's, I don't love his distance passing personally, but in general, the technicality is there. I think this is a good player. I would not be upset about having him in a vacuum. I think the whole question for me is price tag and really whether center back should be the top priority in this transfer window. And personally, I question that, but that looks like that's the direction they're going.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about center backs that United had last season and the extent to which they enabled Ten Hag to play a high line. I think that's a little bit of missing the forest for the trees, because I don't think that the problem was that United were playing a high line and the center backs were making mistakes. I think the problem was that they weren't really playing a consistently high line and the center backs were dropping off. And we've heard a lot of assertions that that is because of the center backs themselves. But I personally think that that's something that a coach should be able to fix over the course of a season. I still do think that you run a very possible scenario where one of Lissandro or Maguire spends a lot of next season injured, and then you have to play a center back who just isn't really up to the standard at this level. And so United need to buy at center back. The question is, what are the options that United actually have at that position? The concern with Branthwaite, we've heard a lot about his two-footedness. So I went and actually watched a few PSV games where he played at right center back. And while I think he is good with his left foot and good with his right foot for a left-footed player, I don't think he's this overtly progressive, consistently playing the ball between the lines, right-footed player. I don't even think he's as good with his left foot as a player like Lissandro Martinez or, you know, no, it's not. Or in recent years, you know, we've seen other center backs at other teams that are really good on the ball. You know, John Stones is probably also an unfair comparison, but even a player like Aymeric Laporte of Man City, I don't think he's as strong on the ball with his left as someone like that. So I think he's quite a bit down the pecking order in terms of being an elite center back on the ball with his left foot. And I think on his right foot, he's probably marginally an upgrade over Varane in terms of his eye for progressive passes and his ability to resist pressure. And so that leaves you in a position where I think you have, in two left-footed center backs, the best outcome is the equivalent of two right-footed center backs. And we've seen throughout last season, Ten Hag did not want to play two right-footed center backs when he didn't have to. And he consistently chose the players, the two center backs available who he thought were the best one with his right foot and the best one with their left foot. And so I think you run into the possibility that Branthwaite isn't actually a starter for United if that happens. That being said, I do think everything else is good here from the perspective of him as a player and how he helps United. Like, I think he's 6'5", which adds a lot of kind of the size and physicality discrepancy that we've been seeing with United in their back line. I agree he's not as fast as, say, I'm trying to think of a really good example in the Premier League right now. I mean, Varane is probably a good one. He's not, I don't think he's quite as fast as Varane was in his peak.
Mickey van de Ven, that would be the other one.
Mickey van de Ven is a great example. Yeah, I don't think he's quite that fast, but I do think he is quite fast. I think he would probably be United's fastest center back by a reasonable amount if he joined. Yeah, I mean, I basically think the risk is that you can't play him and Lissandro Martinez together, and you just spent £65 million to add a center back that will only really be giving you minutes in alternative systems, or when Lissandro Martinez is rotated out of the team, or when Lissandro Martinez is injured, because I don't see Ten Hag replacing Martinez with Branthwaite, and so yeah, that feels like a pretty big risk, I think. But I will say that of all the players I've watched for United this summer, I do think this is one that I would actually like to see playing for United in terms of the level the player is at, the age, the traits that he has outside of the left-footedness. So I'm kind of mixed here.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, this is an interesting conversation that you and I have been having frequently, Aaron, is the two of us have sort of hyper-fixated to an extent on physicality, I think, and raw physical tools over the last year, sort of in reaction to failures United have had in the transfer market. And I think Branthwaite is a great example of somebody who, through that lens, is intriguing. Because the raw physical tools are really, really positive. Like, this is a player who could be one of the most dominant physical players in the Premier League. And that is always going to be something that you have to keep in mind. But I do think from the technical side, he's possibly not worth this fee, at least at this point. He also, I would say in particular at right center back, he's got some strange traits. He really likes to do this thing that I really don't like, which is he'll cut, when he's playing right center back, he'll cut back onto his left foot and play a diagonal to the left wing, in particular the left fullback. And I really, it's just a high risk ball that he doesn't have the technicality to play on a line. So he lofts it. And it just seems like a recipe for disaster. I really do not enjoy that particular tendency of his.
Yeah, I tried to catch a lot of passing with his left foot and right foot at right center back. I think his left foot, he has a better, I think, power. He has better ball striking in that with his right foot, he can play line-breaking passes from the perspective of literally getting the ball between the lines. But he kind of plays them so they just sometimes roll into midfield, as opposed to kind of slowing down at the foot of the midfielder so the midfielder can take it on the turn. Stuff like that I think will be more punished in the Premier League than it was in the Eredivisie. I also think he, with his left foot, I think he's generally quite good, but I don't think he, like you say, consistently chooses the best option, which is perhaps coachable. So it's not as big of a deal, but
I mean, I don't.
You're definitely looking at some work on the ball.
Yeah, I don't know that it's that coachable at right center back. Like I think.
Yeah, it's not something that you're looking for in your right center back. Is a player who is going to be switching the ball. At least, okay, no, it's not something that Ten Hag is going to be looking for, I think.
Yes, but I'm more specifically, I mean, it's really difficult to, I think, coach a left-footed player out of gravitating towards his left foot and playing passes that are more comfortable for him on his left foot. And like for a center back, naturally, those passes are going to be cross-field switches on your left foot. And I think if you don't have very, very good tech, good technicality, which I don't feel that he does, it can really, it could be a problem. But all of that said, I think this is a good player. So to your point, like this is a player I would not be uncomfortable with United using and who I could see being very high impact eventually. It's just I don't think he's very high impact currently. And we haven't spoken about this yet, but it does really concern me how much of the transfer budget is going to go to this transfer, because I think it could be like what more than a third of the net spend for the summer, if not more, like almost half. And that worries me because I don't think this is going to move. I don't think this gets you from, you know, middle of the table up into the top four. By any means.
Yeah. One more question on this before I kind of go into the meta of center backs. One thing we mentioned was that Branthwaite becomes a much better option if and when Lisandro Martinez is injured. Should United not get Branthwaite, what happens next season if Lisandro spends most of the season injured? Do you buy a right center back and then go with Maguire on the left? And is that an option Ten Hag will actually use? Or is this a route back to playing Evans if United don't recruit a left-footed center back in this window?
I don't know what the solution is if you don't get a left-footed center. If Lisandro gets hurt and you don't have a left-footed center back, yeah, I mean you're gonna have to probably use a right-footed center back.
I guess you could use Shaw if you sign a left back.
Yeah, but then you're counting on Shaw to be healthy, which I think is a worse bet than it is to bet on Lisandro being healthy.
Yeah,
it's an interesting question. But I think you don't need to devote half of the budget to... I'm jumping ahead, I know, but you don't need to devote half of the budget to getting a left center back, especially if your plan is for that left center back to not necessarily start, is my point in the abstract, removed from Branthwaite.
All right. So now looking at the other options, United have basically been precluded from a move for Jean-Claire Todibo of Nice because Nice are owned by Ineos and both Nice and United are playing in the Europa League. Ratcliffe has actually come out and talked about this. And so I think it's pretty safe to say that one's not going to happen. The other major target seems to be Lenny Yoro, who is personally my first choice. We could talk about him briefly. Is it particularly relevant? Because I think he's going to Real Madrid.
Yeah, talk about it a little bit.
Yoro, born 2005, right-footed center back. He's probably 6'3". He is, in fact, 6'3". Plays for Lille in Ligue 1. Has played a lot of minutes across their last two seasons. Not like a 30 plus 90s kind of situation, but enough to see his ability at the top level. I think he's gained a lot of attention for his performances against Mbappe when Lille have played PSG in the last season. I think really what you're seeing with Yoro here is his 1v1 defending is very, very standout. Very, very composed on the ball. He has the physicality to play in a high line. And I think as pertains to United, he kind of plays like he hasn't been 6'3 his entire youth career, which I'm pretty sure he hasn't because he's born in 2005 up to this point, because I don't think he's quite refined in the air. And so I think the major areas of development here are in the air. And on the ball, he's very comfortable, but he's not progressive as far as I've seen. And so becoming a little bit more combative in the air, growing into kind of using his body better in aerial situations and then being more progressive as a passer are where he needs to develop. But based on the tools he has, I think it seems quite likely that he will probably develop all those things. The fee to Real Madrid looks like it's going to be around 50 million euros, which is significantly less than United are reportedly looking at paying for Branthwaite. Overall, I think this is probably just as good, if not better, of a prospect than Branthwaite. And I think the fact that he's right-footed makes him, as well as cheaper, as well as younger, makes him the better purchase if United are able to get him. There have been some rumors that United will get both Branthwaite and Yoro, which might be overkill. But yeah,
I basically think that will not happen.
Yeah, I don't think United will get Yoro. Yeah, I mean, he's basically a prototypical center back for what United need in terms of what I think Yoro could be in two or three seasons. But because he is that, and he is perhaps the only one who is that, other clubs who are higher positioned in Europe will also want him. And so I'm pretty sure Real Madrid will get him. Even if Real Madrid don't get him, I think there are three or four other clubs who will probably get him.
Fair enough. That does it on Lenny Yoro, I think.
Awesome. So anything you want to add?
No, you've seen far more of him than I have. I've only seen him in like one-off matches. So,
yeah, I was watching Lille a couple months ago to watch a few different players, and he was by far the most standout in terms of suitability and quality for a team like United. Yeah, but with Yoro and Todibo out, it kind of narrows down the options. The only other two center backs we've seen links to, at least I've seen links to in a credible outlet, have been Mark Gay, who's currently playing at the Euros for England, and Trevoh Chalobah, Chelsea being the permanent selling mill because they're doing something to comply with the profit and sustainability rules of the Premier League now, or financial fair play. Any thoughts on Gay and Chalobah?
Gay, I really like.
The major caveat with Gay for me is that he's not good in the air. Or, I mean, he's not extremely good in the air.
I was going to say,
which is fine in isolation.
I think he's pretty good in the air. Like, I think he's probably league average.
I feel like he might be slightly below league average. He's definitely shorter than league average.
Yeah,
he
for is. Sure.
Yeah. And so, kind of similar idea with Todibo for what it's worth. I think that works in isolation. I don't know if that works in particular for United as a team that I think have been struggling for height, a team that's struggling for height at center back if Lisandro Martinez is starting. And so, I think you're spending 40+ million pounds and not necessarily forming a solidified first choice partnership. But I also think that you could have a partnership that's weak in the air and good at everything else and perhaps be very dominant in the Premier League. So I would have optimism about a move for Gueye. As for Chalaba, I haven't actually gotten to scouting him yet, but I'm guessing based on the dozens of Chelsea games I've seen where he's played over the years that I would come to the conclusion that he is probably good enough to be a squad player and worth the reported 25 million fee, but probably doesn't end up being good enough to be a long-term starter for United.
Fair enough. For what it's worth, I have seen two other links, but they're two basically youth players. And they are Enzo Mino, who plays for Boca, but he's a kid and he plays at Argentina. I haven't seen him play at all. And then Faye, who Barcelona are going to have to sell from their youth team to meet financial restraints. But I think based on what I've heard from other people, he's probably not ready for United or to be starting for United at least.
I think buying a youth center back is a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all.
I don't know anything about either of those two players, I'll be honest. But yeah, I think the idea of going for a youth player makes a ton of sense because the market is clearly not perfect, in my opinion, if you miss out on Euro. And so I think we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. It leaves United with a couple options. They can bet on quality, which is, I think, what you'd probably be doing with someone like Chalaba. They can bet on fit, which is what you'd be doing with Branthwaite or Gueye. They could do neither and bet on potential. And instead just go, we're going to sign someone young and then deal with the consequences of what we have for a year or two. It might get ugly, but hopefully in a few years we will have a coherent starting center back partnership.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that.
All right, I guess we can end off with, I meant to embed these questions into the discussion, but we'll make them a one-word answer for you, Case, and I'll give mine as well. Will Crawford asks, assuming United don't get Euro and are priced out of Branthwaite, who would be your pick for center back?
If I have to give a name, Gueye. Yeah, it would be Gueye. Like assuming Todibo is off the table, because that would be my pick otherwise. If I don't have to give a name, I would just say in general, I would love to see United go for like one of these particularly young center back prospects, whether it be Anselmino, whether it be Faye or somebody else who isn't necessarily on the radar. I think that's a really smart way to recruit. I, many, many years ago, loved the Saliba move that Arsenal made when they bought him from, I think it was Saint Etienne at the time, and then loaned him back out to, I think it was Lille?
He did loan spells at a number of French clubs. Yeah. He played for Nice, he played for Marseille.
Marseille, yeah, it was Nice and then Marseille, I think. Yeah, I love that, because I think Saliba clearly had really, really high-end talent, and they made a decision. Well, I didn't love the third loan because they loaned him back to Saint Etienne and then they loaned him, I think, to Nice and then Marseille. And I felt the third was overkill. Yeah. But conceptually, I think that's a really smart way to do things.
They paid about 30 mil for who is now one of the best center backs in the world.
Yeah. Whether repeatedly loaning a player in their developmental stages is good for the player is a different question. But I think approaching it from a really young age, like trying to get a 17-year-old, is smart. It makes sense, especially if you see a really high ceiling on ability to impact senior football. But I realize, you know, I think it's highly unlikely that we do something like that because you've got a manager who I think going into the season is basically hanging on by his fingernails. Like, I don't think it's going to take that much for them to pull the plug on him.
Yeah, I'll probably say Gueye as well. In terms of the main options, I think there are a couple other players who have not been really linked that might be worth a look. I watched a bit of Antonio Silva while I was watching João Neves. I don't really think United should sign Antonio Silva. And then there's a number of other names who have played in a back three primarily who might be worth a look. if and when they are linked, but of the players that I could see United going for and that there have been rumors about, I would probably pick Gray. I would not be unhappy with Chalobah for 25 million at this stage as a squad signing. I think there's a chance he just gives you squad minutes consistently for the next 5-6 seasons, and that would probably be worth it. And there's a lot to like about his game as well, but I don't think that solves the starting center back issue that is created, sort of created by Varane leaving, but also has existed for many, many years now. All right. No Devils. This is a segment where we allow you to ask any question about football, but with one caveat. The question cannot be about United. All right. Case, you said you've been enjoying the Euros so far. Other than Oranje, who I thought looked pretty impressive against France, actually, who are some of your lead candidates so far? Let's say two lead candidates, like favorites, two dark horses, and two underdogs, teams you're watching out for here. And everyone keep in mind, we're recording this after Group B has ended. So if Case picks a team that perhaps should have finished in the top three of Group C or D and ended up getting eliminated, bear with him and me.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Spain would be my immediate favorite. I think Spain has been the most impressive. Yesterday they were a little bit late, like they were laboring a little bit, but I think they made 10 changes. So
you watched the Spain game yesterday?
I watched both. You can see in the background. Okay, I've got two TVs.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a sickness. but
he's got the Copa America on one TV and Celtics game 5 on the other.
Literally, yes. Literally yesterday I had the Red Sox game on the one TV and I had Colombia Paraguay on the bottom TV. Yeah, otherwise Spain is definitely the one that has by far impressed me the most. A lot of people are saying Germany. Germany have been good, but it's kind of an awkward result at the end there.
Yeah, I'm not as high on Germany as everybody else is, to be honest.
Yeah. When France get Mbappe back, France will still be really, really dangerous. England have been very poor. I'm backing off of them. I do think they look very beatable. In terms of dark horses, interesting question.
You cannot pick... So wait, let's outline some rules here.
Okay.
You cannot pick Germany... one sec. So for dark horses, you cannot choose Germany, Spain, England, France, or Portugal.
Okay.
So that leaves Italy and Belgium on the table.
I wouldn't pick them.
Netherlands, of course.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess Netherlands are also a bit of a free pick. I think they're probably the best of the rest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would say the Dutch side is the best of the sides I'm not allowed to pick.
It's kind of boring, though. But even though
It is. I'll be honest. I actually liked how Croatia were playing for long spells. It looks like they're not going to make the knockouts now. It would take a huge... I think they need like 3 or 4 results to go very specifically their way. Because they only have 2 points in third, but...
They need England to win by 3, and then Czechia and Georgia to lose.
Yeah, which is plausible. The hardest part about that is England winning by 3, I think. I'm not even saying that to be annoying. Like, I think they go up 2-0. I don't think they're going for a third.
Everyone listening to this tomorrow when England have won 4-0.
I mean, I hope they do, because I think Croatia are... I think it's kind of a shame if Croatia don't go through.
They've gotten really unlucky with the two stoppage time equalizers. But also, I think they're just... Like, I think physically they peaked in, like, 2016 Euro when they got eliminated early. And then the 2018 World Cup. And then I think they've kind of been, like, hanging on ever since.
Yeah,
and so while I like a lot of what they do, I don't think that they necessarily have the sharpness in the opposition box or the physicality in their own to really make the difference in the later stages of this tournament. But yeah,
Yeah, I don't know about physicality in their own, but I agree about
I think maybe in their own box is probably the wrong way of putting it, but I think they're vulnerable to counters, to say the least.
Yeah, I agree, especially with their starting midfield. It's Modric is getting pretty difficult to accommodate, in my opinion. Even though he's super important to what they do, so I'm not saying drop Modric. And then I guess the other side I would pick is Austria. I'm a bit worried about our matchup with Austria in, 2 hours now? We're currently recording 2 hours before Netherlands plays Austria. They've looked pretty strong. I don't know that I would pick them to go deep, but I could definitely see them pulling off a really big upset, which I suppose is what a dark horse is. And then what was the last thing I had to pick? I had to pick two.
Underdogs.
Underdogs, okay.
Like straight up, like... Sides that, okay, let's define it as this. Sides that you would not have expected to make it to the knockout stages, but now you think could have a shot in the knockout stages. Georgia. In the first round of the knockout stages.
Yeah, Georgia would be okay. my first pick. I think if you get Georgia as a third place team, you have had horrible luck as like a first place draw side.
Shout out Georgia, by the way. They're so much fun.
Yeah.
That Turkey versus Georgia game was
fantastic.
Legitimately the game of the tournament.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the number of players in that match who will be like leading, I think, European attackers for big sides was very, very high. I mean, Kvaratskhelia dominating the headlines going into the match and then Arda Güler going out of the match, but there were some more players in there who looked really, really good. So, and under 23. So yeah, really good game.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, in terms of others, I don't know that I would actually be worried about this matchup, knock on wood, but Romania, I felt have played better than I expected. So that would be my pick. That'd be my pick.
Okay.
You're up. You're on the spot.
Yeah, I am. So for favorites, I'll pick Spain and France. I basically am picking the team that I think has been the most coherent tactically in terms of both the system they play and the players they have available for that.
Yeah, how about Yamal and Nico Williams? That is a scary one.
Oh, that's a... If they had that for the last 10 years, I think they'd have more tournament victories. And I honestly think Spain have undervalued those traits in previous tournaments.
Yeah, possibly.
I think sometimes it's even worth it to play players who aren't as good but offer those things. I think they discovered that with Morata in the last couple tournaments, but now they've got proper wingers as well. Feels like they can go quite deep. France, mainly because of player quality. Like, I think it's going to be hard to outright beat this side. We saw that at the World Cup. I think that's basically what inclines me to choose them over an England or a Germany, where I think England have the player quality to some extent, but they've got key issues now that I think are debilitating the side, which I felt that there would be at the start of the tournament. And then Germany, I just don't think that defensively their personnel is as good as their attacking personnel. And I also think their attacking personnel isn't quite as balanced as some other sides. It's a lot of like half spaces, 9-10 wing kind of hybrid players. And so I don't know how that will map out when they face sides that they need to break down to win the match.
Yes, that said, I enjoy Fullkrug. Like, I just like...
Oh, yeah.
I like him. I enjoy it. Like, I don't know. There's something about that kind of striker that I just find super amusing.
Do you think he should start over Havertz?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know that... I don't love either option for how they play, quite frankly. Like, I just don't love Havertz at center forward. I understand why you can do it at club level at a really coherent side like Arsenal, but I don't think he's just a striker. I don't buy that. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. But at the same time, Fulkrug is kind of a blunt object. You know what I mean? Like... not a guy you use for incisive football, you use for blunt force trauma. football.
Which is totally perfect at this level.
It's exactly what you want at the Euro.
Yeah. I think Portugal could also get thrown into the mix if they figure out some stuff tactically, is how I'm going to put it. But right now they're not for me. Not to win the tournament, at least right now. Okay. Dark horses. Yeah, Austria is my first pick here. My one concern is I'm not convinced they will score even when they dominate matches. Like, I thought they really held their own well against France, who are a perfect set of players to exploit their weaknesses. And then they were really good against Poland. So I would have them as a good contender to upset someone in the round of 16 if they get a tough draw. I think right now they're actually looking at Belgium. I think I might give them the edge over Belgium, but that might look silly when De Bruyne and Lukaku both score braces and Doku dribbles past 18,000 players.
Lukaku without VAR, maybe. What?
Lukaku against the offside trap. And then the other second dark horse. Part of me is tempted to pick Denmark again. I'm scared they'll be out by tomorrow. I think at that point, Netherlands and Belgium are definitely probably better than Denmark. But those aren't fun choices because they're basically always teams at this level. I think Denmark, but I do think if Denmark make the knockout stages, they have a good shot. I really hope Højlund starts scoring. I know this is no Devils, but I feel like if Højlund starts scoring, it would make a very big difference. I think he's looked a little bit flat in these opening games.
Yes, but if like the striker started scoring, it would help. It would help them win games.
Well, yeah, but I also think he can, which is a key distinction here. It felt like I didn't watch their first game, but it felt like he couldn't really get a footing in the game against England. I think maybe against Serbia he'll have a better shot. It also feels like he's just. I think they're struggling to bring him into matches, not dissimilarly to United this season, but I think if they do bring him into matches and get him chances in front of goal, he is the type of player who can score them, and that would turn them from, I'd say, a coherent side that perhaps lacks a bit of attacking verve to a good side that could go deep into the tournament. Yeah, and then for underdogs, I don't actually know. Who'd you pick? Georgia and Romania?
Yes, Georgia and Romania. That said, I don't really believe in Romania, if we're being entirely honest. I've been impressed by their fight, shall we say.
I'm tempted to be really bold and choose Ukraine, but I think the odds are very stacked against them going through. They have to get points against Belgium, and then Romania versus Slovakia has to have a winner. But I do think Ukraine. I think the key difference between Romania, Slovakia, and Ukraine is that Ukraine have the player quality up front, in particular, to actually make a difference in these early knockout rounds. I also think they were a little bit hard done by in the Romania game.
I think they were quite hard done by.
Slovakia game.
Yeah.
Like two long shots just fly into the net, and then you have to break down this team that has been dreaming of being able to not allow you to attack the entire days before the match.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think if Ukraine can sneak through, they're one of the sides that I would give a chance in the round of 16. And then I don't want to go with the same ones as you, even though I'd probably be inclined to pick Georgia, but I'll pick Hungary. At this point, I think it's quite likely they will make it through to the knockout stages. And while I don't think they were particularly impressive when I watched them against Switzerland, I still think that it's basically the same logic. They're going to be difficult to score against, and then they're going to have a couple of attacking players who I think can make the difference in scenarios where they can sneak results. And so I give them, for that reason, a better chance than a side like Romania, Slovakia. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what we'll go with. Part of me wants to pick Turkey, but they're just not good defensively, and I think that will be their undoing against coherent opposition.
Yeah.
They also lack a striker. So not being good defensively and then lacking a striker is just a surefire way to look great and get eliminated early.
Yeah, I'm not totally sold on Turkey. Guler is awesome, but I was more impressed with Georgia when they played, and I thought Portugal kind of dismantled them. So,
yeah. All right. So you had France and Spain as well, right? And then you had.
I had France and Spain and was there another side I said? No. Yes, I had France and Spain.
So you had France and Spain, Austria and
Georgia, was it? No, Austria and Croatia. Croatia.
Oh, and
Croatia. Austria
and Croatia. And then you had Georgia and Romania. And I had France and Spain, Austria, and I didn't pick Switzerland. I didn't think of Switzerland.
What are they?
They've got Italy in the round of 16.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a decent shot, to be honest. They've got Italy in the round of 16, and then I think they're looking at England in the quarterfinal.
Yeah,
England get the job done today.
They could go deep.
Well, anyway, I had Austria and Denmark originally, but I might actually revise that to Austria and Switzerland. And then as the underdogs, I had Ukraine and Hungary. So there you go. One of those – I would say one of those 12 teams will win the Euros, but I don't necessarily believe that.
Yeah.
I think with that, we'll call it an episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, everybody.
Hope you enjoyed this week's Devils in the Details. You can follow us at Devils ITD Pod on Twitter or on a variety of streaming platforms. Our awesome theme music was made by Jacob Connor. You can find at Jacob J. Connor on Twitter. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.